Live from the Go Mile High Studios, this is the best damn sports show, period. With your hosts,
Ian McClintock,
Jason Miko,
Jack Jones,
Estelle Ambrose,
and Tariq Young.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the best damn sports show, period. I am your host, Tariq. I am here with Jack, Ian, Blake, and Gordon. So, let's get down to business. We crowned a new NBA champion last night, the Denver Nuggets. What's everybody's thoughts on it?
I think that every single one of us around this table might have shed a little tear last night. It's just the... I mean, we've seen the Broncos win the Super Bowl in 2015. We saw the Avs win the Cup last year. But, I mean, this one just hits a little bit different because it's their first. Like, when the Broncos first won theirs and when the Avs first won theirs, this is the Nuggets' first. So, it just hits a little closer to home.
It was so bittersweet last night. To see the city so happy and everyone celebrating, it just felt amazing because, as you said, we've seen the Broncos win a championship before. We've seen the Avalanche. But the Nuggets have never done it. And it took 47, 48 years for it to happen.
It took them 47 years to even get there. Like, yeah. The Rockies had even been to a World Series. They didn't win, obviously. But this is our first taste of the finals with the Nuggets. And they pulled through and they won it. And I think we all had a good time last night.
It was definitely an amazing feeling. So what are your thoughts, Blake?
Oh, that's a long time coming. I mean, I'm a little bit later to the Nuggets fandom train than most, but I mean, been solidly on it since, like, really solidly since 2014, I think, is where I really hit the gas pedal. But it was such a long time coming. I think after watching the whole Jamal Murray story arc is the biggest for me, watching that come back. Because, I mean, I feel like we had the title snatched from us a couple times, first in the bubble and then after Jamal Murray's injury. So for me, it was watching that come to fruition.
Well, especially right after they got Aaron Gordon from the Magic and the Nuggets were playing well, and then they were heading into the playoffs, and all of a sudden, every Nuggets fan's heart breaks, and Jamal Murray goes down for essentially one full season, but it was like one of the last games of the year, so it felt like 2 years because it was the most important time of the year. And I think the Nuggets definitely could have gone to a championship and maybe won one, but I also think that time off for Jamal gave everybody a chance to grow because we also had MPJ. First of all, Jamal had to get over his injury and grow from that along with MPJ. And then you have Aaron Gordon in kind of a two role on this team where he has to be one of the main scorers. And he can develop his game a little bit better, you know, learn how to play with Jokic super well. And then, obviously, you have Jokic with the weight of the world on his shoulders at all times, and he's gotten used to it at this point. That's how consistent he is. So those years were hard and tough, but those are tough lessons you need to learn to become a champion. And you can see it with the chemistry between Gordon and Jokic. I mean, those 2 years, they kind of – or the 1 year in the playoff run that they kind of had just the two of them, they built this – different kind of chemistry. So I think it ended up impacting them in a great way, even though it didn't look like that at the time.
Yeah, and you mentioned another guy, so I don't throw him out. I feel like I always kind of neglect to mention MPJ when we talk about guys that have come back from big injuries and surgeries. Can't forget that MPJ has gone through not just one, but a couple surgeries. Yeah. And so he's also getting to be at the tippy top of that mountain for making that comeback.
Wow. They definitely fought through adversity. I definitely will say that. Those injuries are really hard to come back from, especially for Murray. Like, you had to take time off, and there was a lot of fans that wanted him back, but he just didn't feel like he was ready to come back. And like I said, it's a hard injury to come back from. You got to have the confidence in yourself to be able to get back out there.
Well, and, I mean, we've seen Jamal Murray speak out to Klay Thompson also because he had the same injury as Jamal Murray. So he's mentioned talking to Klay every once in a while and how Klay encouraged him to get back to his form that Jamal's been playing at. So, I mean, it's definitely not easy to come back from an injury like that. But when you have other players in the league that you're connected with going through the same injury as you, then you know you're going to get through it.
Well, and even in the playoffs last year, I remember they got matched up against the Warriors, and I was like, man, I hope Jamal Murray plays because I think the Nuggets would have a somewhat chance of at least competing in the series. I don't know if I felt 100% confident on them passing the Warriors or beating them in a series, but I really wanted Jamal Murray to come back, and I remember being really frustrated that he didn't come back. And now, sitting at the spot that we're in now and that the Nuggets are in now, it was all worth it. There was all a plan behind it, and you can see Michael Malone's plan and Tim Conley, his slight plan, along with the combination of Calvin Booth's plan and the Kroenke's plan and Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray's plan. It's all coming right before our eyes, and this team is fantastic.
Most definitely, most definitely. You know, I love what Gordon's got going on in here. He got the sunglasses and the hat. Remind me a little bit of LeBron James talking about, he said Nuggets in five. That's how
Nuggets in five. I was confident in that. I was confident with that pick.
You know, I said Nuggets in five, and then they lost game two, and I started freaking out, and then they won back-to-back, and I was like, oh, yeah, Nuggets in five again.
Yeah, it was a real defensive series. So I know there was points of last night where everyone's like, oh, what's going to happen, especially with some of the calls. So,
well, and I wouldn't say that the refs were – I mean, the refs are the refs. They definitely let them play last night, but I feel like when it came down to the heat of the moment – they didn't let them play, which was kind of weird in my opinion.
A lot of people would say that in most NBA games, refs have hit and miss moments. They had a lot of miss moments.
Well, and we were talking about this before the show. Like, I don't understand how Aaron Gordon gets a foul called on him when he gets kicked in the nuts by Jimmy Butler. Like, I seriously, like, maybe he was in his path, but it looked like he kicked out his leg and did not need to fall. He just fell over for the sake of it to get the foul. And they reviewed it, and they said that it wasn't overturned, and that's what blew my mind. And even the broadcasters that don't seem to like the Nuggets very much were mind blown.
It was at that point where I was worried, because there's been rumors that they're going to penalize flopping in the NBA in the future. And that, them not overturning that, was like, well, there goes all my hope for that system to be successful.
Well, yeah, it was just like, that was very obviously everybody was talking about Mike Breen and Mark Jackson and Van Gundy on the, I don't like listening to those guys very much. I really don't. But they were even saying it like, oh, obviously that's not a foul. That's great defense by Aaron Gordon. He's standing straight up with his arm up. What else is he supposed to do?
So does the foul go on Aaron Gordon or Aaron Gordon's groin area? Like, well, yeah. Who's the foul go on?
Do you want
to
call the foul on his nuts? Because I don't think you can do that.
I will say, last night's game, in the closing moments, I felt like we were just watching like a tackle football game, but for basketball.
Yeah.
It's like watching a college basketball game. You know, they're fouling every chance they get. They're just sending the other team to the free throw line, and it's just back and forth the entire time.
You would see so many. There would always be one person down the court that was stuck back there because they were throwing their hands up like, it's a foul. Because they were definitely playing some football. Come on, yeah. Well, it seemed like they were playing football last night, I'm telling you.
Yeah, they let a lot of things go, it seemed like, which it seemed as though they were doing it kind of both ways. So I was appreciative of it because it is the NBA Finals. Let them play a little bit. There were some, I don't know, I think when it comes to Jokic sometimes they just are like, oh, he's so big that
he's can
not
take
even
it.
Affected by the foul. And I'm like, yeah, but he's still getting like, everybody's around him hitting his arms. Like, you see the scratches that come off this guy's arms, and they just don't call fouls. But, I mean, you let him play a little bit. It's game five of the NBA Finals. It was an incredibly defensive game. I mean, when was the last time we saw an NBA Finals game that was 94-89 like it was last night? I think it's been
in the 90s, probably.
Well, yeah, because we're just coming off of the Warriors dynasty where they're a big, high-scoring offensive team. You have that year with the Raptors where Kawhi was just elite and they were scoring a ton of points, and then the same with the Bucks. I mean, Giannis was dominant and they had a great defensive team, but they were scoring a lot of points as well. So this series as a whole was very defensive. The Nuggets never even hit that 120 mark.
Yeah, it was very defensive. Just watching it, especially last night, you could see how much of a defensive game it was, just because the Nuggets were... Yeah, it's crazy how many threes they shot, and it really didn't kill them in the end.
Five of 28 at the end. That was insane.
And in the first half, it was 1 for 15.
1 for 15.
Yeah, Jokic hit the only three in the first
half. And that was in the first quarter.
Well, I know. He only shot one, too. I was thinking he should maybe throw up a couple more if he's the only one hitting, but...
That combined with that start of the game and the four straight scoreless possessions where they just turned it over,
well,
boom, boom,
and
boom.
The defense in the first half by Miami was definitely there, but you could see it through the TV. They were just, like, nervous. Nobody wanted to take the shot, you know? Nobody wanted to – they were like, oh, I don't want to ruin the moment. You know, it was almost like they did, like, you do it, you do it, you do it.
They didn't want to be that one guy where in the next day in the morning they're like, this guy costed the game for them. They could have won, but yeah. he didn't do it.
You see MPJ, you know, not shoot a couple shots that he was wide open for. It happened to KCP, happened to Christian Brown. Yeah, even happened to Jamal Murray a couple times. I mean, these guys were just a little nervous. They were,
and I mean, they were good looks. Also, they were wide open, and there were great shots, but they just weren't going down.
There was also some that they forced too. And I will say, the Nuggets. I give praise for Nuggets. Like 100% of the shots you don't take, you miss. But they were shooting with confidence, even though they weren't making it. I give them that credit. But also at the same time, I have to say a bad problem that – or something that caused the Heat to lose last night was not basically Jimmy Butler not stepping up to help his team out. Like, you could see he had 11 points in the fourth quarter, but other than that, he was sitting there trying to pass the ball instead of trying to take his shots.
Going into the fourth, he had like 9 points. I think he was 2 for 11. I mean, he was really not shooting very well. And then – you know, I definitely got a little nervous when he hit those back-to-back threes because I was like, oh, no. Like, we've seen him go off at the end of games before. Like, is this going to be another one of those moments?
And he's a fourth-quarter player. We saw in the Boston series, the Milwaukee, and we just saw in every series the fourth quarter he comes alive.
Well, but that's why I thought the way they won was so beautiful, because they won by taking the ball away from him, by trapping him and him
double-teaming him,
making a bad play. And the Nuggets end up winning the game with their defense. I thought it was a very beautiful ending to a beautiful season.
Yeah, we're definitely happy to see the Nuggets finally get one after so long. But my question for everyone at the table is, where do you rank this Nuggets finals run at the end of the day? I say, where do you rank it in the past 10 years?
That's a tough question, because then that would put us back to 2013, which was what finals was that? Do you remember, Ian, or anybody?
That was Heat and the Heat. Spurs. Heat Spurs won the first time, I think.
The first time or it was this, the first. The it was time, the first the Miami time. Heat. So then you have back to back years of LeBron, which turns into like Steph Curry and all of them with a couple other guys here and there. I think Sacramento had San Antonio had their last one in there. You know, the Bucks and Toronto. I think in the past 10 years, it definitely ranks up there. I think that obviously, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers coming back 3-1 is the best championship in the past 10 years. Just purely down 3-1 to the technically best team ever regular season record-wise. And then I also think you have to get a lot of credit to that Toronto team with Kawhi Leonard, because he had pieces around him, but he didn't have a super team, and he was playing a super team. I know they got injured, but you got to give the guy credit for his run. But I'd put it top three in my book. I mean, Jokic individually might have had the best performance in finals history. So.
I could definitely agree with that. He finished, for the first time ever, no other player's done it, with points. He led in points, assists, and rebounds, so... You got to give the man credit where credit is due. So,
oh shit.
And then right back after this, we will continue this discussion about where we rank this Nuggets finals. All right, and we are back on the Best Damn Sports Show, period, live on Go Mile High. So before we went to break, we were talking about where this Nuggets run ranks for the past 10 years. So I want to pass it over to Blake and ask his opinion on where he thinks this finals performance ranks.
Well, for me, it's all time because it's A, my Nuggets, and B, the only finals run that I've watched the entirety of. But you know what? I will throw out there, if we adjust, let me just tweak the question a little bit just to provide a better answer. In regards to like Denver championships, I got to put this over Super Bowl 50, which was surprising to say, but I contemplated that last night. And for me, this gold trophy meant a little bit more than the Manning trophy did, which is crazy to me to say. But
I definitely could agree with that because, like you said, the Broncos have been here before. They've won Super Bowls. The first one felt special. The second one felt special. But the Nuggets haven't been here before and haven't done it. So I agree with you. That over Super Bowl 50, I could roll with that.
Well, and I never would have imagined that because when I first started getting into sports, I really loved the Broncos. And when the Broncos won, they were definitely my favorite team. But as this Nuggets, not even this year, it was the past couple years with Jokic and Murray, kind of like the year before the bubble, I really started getting super, super in the Nuggets, or maybe the year before that when they played Minnesota and lost their last game of the season to not make the playoffs. That was the first season I kind of watched since, you know, all the Nug life. And I just – this watching this playoff run was just, like, magical because I could, like, fully comprehend the entirety of the game because, I mean, when – the Broncos won the Super Bowl, I was like 12. So it was like, I got it, but it wasn't as special to my heart as watching this when I'm fully involved in every game. We're talking about the game every day. I want the Nuggets to win so bad. Nikola Jokic is like my favorite player ever, and they got it done for Denver for the first time ever. So, I mean, I know we're all just agreeing with each other here, but this one is super, super special just because it's the first. I think if the Nuggets were to do it again, it'd feel special, but it wouldn't. We wouldn't rank up the same way.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we talk about which our favorite players are. Mine, for me, it's Jamal Murray because I'm a Kentucky guy. I've been watching Jamal Murray since he came to Kentucky in 2015-16, went straight to the NBA. I'm like, okay, hope he does well. Comes to Nuggets, I'm like, I'm a Denver fan. This is a dream come true. So, I mean, I've loved Jamal Murray so much. And just his journey to – from when he was a young kid to college to the NBA and his injury. I mean, it's just an incredible story.
Well, and the fun part about this Nuggets team, too, is it's full of guys getting their first championships. So whether they are the youngest rookie on, you know, the team, or they're one of the oldest guys in the league.
Uncle Jeff.
Ish Smith, you know, these guys, DeAndre Jordan, they're all getting their first ring, which was, like, so wholesome to me to watch. Guys, the older guys, especially like Jeff Green, Ish Smith, DeAndre Jordan, no matter what contribution they had to the finals run, whether it was being another coach on the bench or playing key minutes off the bench, they were all important to the run, and they finally get the satisfaction after years and years of playing in the NBA to say, I'm a champion.
DeAndre Jordan's key minutes off the bench last night.
Yeah, the only 2 minutes he played in the finals. I was glad he got in there, and he got blocked.
Yeah, he played good defense last night.
Yeah,
I could tell you now, he's sitting there telling Chris Paul, I got a ring before you.
He's like, hey, suck it, boys. I got one first.
Yeah, but I think that's what makes everything – just so bittersweet. Like, this team, yeah, there's guys on there, there's teams that have guys that have been to the finals before and won it, but majority of this roster, no one has been there and won a championship. So to have a full roster of guys that haven't done that before, that's amazing.
It's like, crazy. I mean, you have your superstar and or your superstars and Jokic or Murray, you've never been there. Aaron Gordon, key defensive player, never been there. MPJ, never been there. The only guy that had been to a finals before was KCP, and he won in the bubble with the Lakers.
Well, there's that. But
and Jeff Green.
I also feel terrible in a way for Christian Brown because he's been staying, chasing the hardware. Then one season that guy doesn't get a trophy at the end of it, what's he going to do with himself?
Well, I know. He's just the ultimate winner. Three back-to-back-to-back state championships, the Natty, and then the NBA championship. Like, this guy's just meant for winning. That's it's purely what it is. That's the whole opposite side of the story. I mean, you have a guy like Ish Smith who's been on 13 NBA teams, been looking for this finals anywhere and everywhere. You have a guy like Christian Brown who can't help but winning. He's like a magnet to winning. So it's just crazy to see, and there's so many wholesome stories within it all.
That, I think that's why Denver drafted him in the first place. They were like, oh, he got that dog.
He's a winner.
He's a winner.
That's what we want around here. You know, I give Stan Kroenke all the credit in the world. Like, he is doing things right. Like, you have four teams within the past year and a half that's won a championship. So,
oh, my God. Yeah, you have
what a time to be a Kroenke.
I know. You have the Rams,
F them picks.
Avs, Nuggets, and then didn't Arsenal also move up to the Champions League this year?
They did.
But they still lost.
Yeah, well, I don't want to talk about it.
They moved up, though.
They
which
did.
Which is also kind of a big deal, so it's just like, you know, invest in Kroenke.
Yes, we were in first place for a long time. We can move on from that. That's all we need to talk about.
You're talking about it more than any of us. It sounds like you want to say something about it.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like you got a lot to get off your chest about
that. I'm an Arsenal fan, okay? There. That's all I have to say. Or else I'm gonna go on a 30-minute rant, so I don't want to do that.
England's blue. Stirred the pot a little bit. But yeah, I give them all the credit in the world. But now I want to shift over to basically almost the same topic, but we're talking about, where do you rank Murray and Jokic as a duo now after this? Because as you can see, Murray has an NBA championship now, but never NBA All-Team, never All-Star.
You know, it's interesting because it's like we're finally back to a point where we have a duo that's a dominant one and a dominant five. And it's kind of like a lot of people, it's hard to compare it because it's so different, but a lot of people compare it to Shaq and Kobe, even though Shaq was a little bit more, I don't know, like dominant in the paint and I guess off the rim. And Kobe was, you know, ice in his veins. He did everything. So you have another dominant centerpiece with a like scoring point guard. You get comparisons to that. I think as of right now in the NBA, you have to put him number one currently. All time, I mean, you could argue back and forth all day. You know, Kobe and Shaq, Pippen and Jordan. It's hard to argue all time because, you know, this is only their first. There's a lot more time to go. I mean, you could even put up an argument for Steph and Clay for everything they've done to win. But currently, if there were power rankings for duos going into the next season, you have to put them number one. They just dominated the entire league and won the championship, and everybody doubted them, and nobody thought they could do it, and they fought through so much adversity. So, and you just don't know how to stop them either. They're impossible to stop. So it's tough to do it all time, though. I mean, there's so many great duos.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. What do you think, Blake?
I think it's easy to get a little bit drunk on the recency bias. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the Jokic-Jamal duo, but I think that currently, and it's the correct time for it. Don't get me wrong there. But I think we're going to talk about that duo a little, just slightly higher than I think we should, because Jokic is going to do that kind of stuff with any kind of high production guy in Jamal's shoes.
And it's just like, it would have happened if it was the Suns. You know, it would have happened if it was the Heat. Are Jimmy Butler and Bam one of the greatest duos? Is Kevin Durant, Devin Booker one of the greatest duos? You're totally right. Recency bias, people are going to talk about them all next season. And if they don't go back to the finals, it's going to be a disappointment.
But know? I guess that I also don't want it to be misinterpreted what I'm saying either. Like, I just don't think that the Nuggets are all... Like, I just discredit the Jamal and Jokic duo just because there's so many more weapons on this team. It's not the type of duo that it's the team is that duo. Like, any night, Gordon shows up with Jokic. MPJ shows up with Jokic. Some nights, Jokic doesn't show up. So, I mean, that's all that I refrain from putting him up there with, like, the real big duo names.
You know,
yes, they're the best current for sure. But all-time duos, they just don't have that. They were the dudes.
Well, and that's when you get into the conversation. You know, every single player you named with one specific player, and that's Jokic. Jokic with this guy, Jokic with this guy. Talk about this guy, the best player in the world. Is that the best, you know, playoff run, one of the best playoff runs of all time by a single individual? I mean, he's the center of it all. If there's two duos going off, he's going to be half of it. So, I mean, you can put Jamal with him there because they did well this playoffs, but you're right. He can form with anybody.
I completely agree with that. I agree. You know, the way I think about it is the Nuggets team as a whole is like a Swiss Army knife. You know, someone's always stepping up no matter. It's not always going to be the two same guys. There's like Christian Brown, rookie, Aaron Gordon. You never know who's going to step up in the right moment. So I give them all the credit in the world. But coming up next, right after our commercial break, we're going to get into some NBA draft talk. Who's going where? And what will the Nuggets do? All right, we are back on the Best Damn Sports Show, period. And right now, right about now, we're going to talk about the NBA draft. You know, it is next week, and we already know who the top five teams are to pick. Number one is the Spurs, two is the Hornets, three is the Blazers, four is the Rockets, and five is the Pistons. We already know who's going number one with Victor Wembanyama. Most definitely, it's written in there.
I don't think so, and I apologize to the radio audience that has to hear this right now because I blew out my vocal cords screaming my head off at the game last night. I'm actually starting to hear more reports that Scoot Henderson might actually jump him for the number one spot, especially with Wembanyama's performance right now in the French League Finals. He's just completely fallen off, and we know that, to be polite, the French Professional League isn't up to the same standards as the NBA, let alone potentially our college. So I would not be surprised if Scoot did go number one, even though everybody assumes that it's Victor.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, especially because Scoot's been talking about that he's been going, he's gonna go number one. So it's gonna be pretty interesting to see.
I mean, I think they want to put that narrative in people's heads just so, you know, they have something else to talk about than Wembanyama. But I mean, I just think, I think there's definitely like a way higher bust factor with him than people are, you know, giving credit to. I think that he's really skinny. I get it, he's tall, but he's, if he's matched up with Embiid, Jokic, Giannis, these guys are going to dominate him just by pure size. Doesn't matter if he's taller. He's going to get those couple bull blocks every game, but was bull an elite defender? Absolutely not. So I think there's a high bust factor, but I also just think, I think that if any person were to shape him up or get him ready for the NBA and be a dominant big man, it would be Popovich. And I think the Spurs see that. And I think that, I think they will end up taking Wembanyama, because if they figure out how to use him correctly, he could be an entire team changer. Unlike Scoot, who I think you'd still need a couple more pieces around. I think that if you use Wembanyama the right way, he is the most NBA ready, just purely off of size and the amazing things he can do. But if you don't use him the right way, he's either going to get injured like Chet, or he's going to get dominated in the paint. So you need to put some muscle on that guy. I mean, we've seen Giannis coming into the league. We saw even Tim Duncan coming in the league. Those guys were skinny. You need to put some weight on, and we'll talk about you being dominant in the NBA.
So who has the number two pick again?
The Hornets. Right?
The Hornets. So let's just theoretically say, from Ian's report, that Victor Wembanyama does not go number one. Do we think Charlotte would take that opportunity? Or
100%, because Charlotte wishes they had the first pick. And I don't know. I think that it would take a really intricate thinking mind to not pick Wembanyama. And I just don't think the Hornets organization has that. No bashing there, but they would. It's like a kid in a candy shop. If Wembanyama was still up there, be like, "Ooh, we're gonna get him," and then they would ruin him. They would completely ruin him. But I've also seen things about the Hornets interested in the guy from Alabama, taking Scoot second if Wembanyama were to technically go first. So it's like there's reports about Scoot going one. There's reports about him going three, two. I mean, we really won't know until that night, but I don't doubt. Wembanyama is going to go number one overall, and I think that the Spurs have faith in their coach to, you know, really get him to the point he needs. I mean, David Robinson was, I don't know, he was pretty built, actually. Mm-hmm. But you just got to put some mass on him.
Yeah, he was. You are correct on that. David Robinson was strong. Wembanyama, he's going to have to eat his vitamins, drink some milk to get to
have some, like Hulk. I know a guy that put it in with some Coke. He put a 2-liter down on occasion.
No, I've heard that putting down 2 liters of Coke works, actually. It helps you win NBA championships.
You get 2 MVPs also, so I mean.
Well, you just have to figure out how to slim down after you're fat. But then you're going to be the most dominant big man in the league. It's the formula is in writing.
You build it up, and then you shed your weaknesses.
Yeah, I definitely think that is one thing the Spurs are trying to take into account is, like, can we build some more weight on this guy? Because, as you said before, Giannis came into the league very skinny, and then he bulked up somehow, and now he's one of the strongest players in the league. So, and plus, especially if he's not going to get that weight up, it also brings a big risk. Like Chet Holmgren last year, he got hurt before the season even started.
In a Drew League game, yeah.
Yeah, in a Drew League game. So, you know, there comes a lot of risk with it. But now I would like to ask, the Nuggets have the 40th pick in the draft, and if someone like Bruce Brown doesn't come back, who do you draft?
Well, it's just so tough going all the way down to 40, because it's like these are guys you're really taking a chance on. But, I mean, you saw it before. They had a similar 41st pick. They take a chance on a guy like Nikola Jokic, and he ends up being the best player in the world. Now, I'm not saying that's guaranteed to happen again at all, and I don't think it will. But at a place like 40, I would imagine the Nuggets have a lot of scouts overseas, have a lot of scouts around the world, and that they're going to end up taking another chance on a foreign player that is not talked about again. I mean, I think a lot of teams are actually going to end up doing that.
Finding guys that have like this. I actually had this pulled up earlier, so I'm glad we came into this. But this is one of my favorite things I read so far today, the Bleacher Report draft notes on Jokic, and it says, unfortunately, his defense will likely prevent him from ever playing 30-plus minutes or starting. However, there's no shame in being a respectable reserve on a winning team in the future.
Yeah, those notes were definitely wrong. It's like, what was his comp? Probably like, I don't even know, somebody, Carlos Boozer.
Nurkic.
Nurkic. Well, it's like a level below Nurkic. That was probably his comp. But I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of random picks in the draft this year because people want to emulate what the Nuggets have or are probably going to try to start because NBA is always following trends. The Warriors just win the title. Everybody wants a three-point shooter. You know, the Bucks win the title. We see the formation back to an actual NBA team. We see teams become teams again. We even saw it with the Warriors in their fourth finals. They became a team again. They weren't a super team. They were a team again. The Nuggets are a team. The NBA is forming back to these homegrown teams. So the draft is going to start becoming more interesting in the upcoming years because I think NBA teams are going to start focusing on it way more than they have in the past because you don't realize the guys down there at 40 that could be your next superstar. So I would imagine the Nuggets having a cheeky, sneaky pick that I don't even know his name.
Yeah, so one thing that I was reading into, and Jack, you might know him because I'm looking at a Kansas kid, and no, Grady Dick's going to be gone before.
Going in the top 20.
Yeah, but the other shooting forward, power forward combo in Jalen Wilson.
Is he going to the draft this year?
He is draft eligible this year. I think that he would be a pretty decent fit, especially if Bruce does walk out.
Well, yeah, he's a little bit bigger than Bruce, but also...
Yeah, he's a 6'6 and a half, 230.
He's definitely got a couple inches on Bruce. I think he has a similar offensive spark for sure. I'd have to look into it more on his defense, but I know one of the big things playing in Kansas at KU is defense. They teach all their guys defense, so I would imagine that he's got to be a solid defender, but I think it could be an interesting pick. I just, with a 40th pick, I just don't see a guy that's making an impact right away.
Sure.
You know, Malone doesn't like his rookies, especially when you get into the second round like that. Like, at least with CB, he was a top 25 pick. Once you kind of get past that first round, I could doubt really that Malone's going to play anybody drafted this year just because you have guys like CB, Payton Watson, Gillespie, and White. Three of those dudes combined played probably like, you know, 60 minutes all year, all by Payton Watson.
Right.
So it's just hard for me to imagine a Nuggets draft pick right now when I know I'm not going to see it right away.
Yeah, but another name that I think that they should look out for, another shooting forward, 6'7", almost 6'8", kid, 200 pounds. Oh, he's only 19 years old, Julian Phillips, a huge defensive presence for the Tennessee Volunteers this last season.
Well, and we know how the Nuggets feel about defense. I mean, this past offseason, that's what they were looking for. They want guys that can score but mainly defend on the perimeter because they had zero perimeter defense last season.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Mr. Will Barton out there who was like kind of having nothing. It was like a 4v5 whenever he was on the floor.
Right.
And you also always have to keep in mind how much of a factor their personality is, especially now that the Bones Highland experiment didn't work out.
Well,
the Nuggets are such a culture team that they're not just going to take a pick and be like, oh, this guy looks good on paper. So much stock is going to go into who they are as a person, too.
Well, yeah, like the Nuggets are big family, you know, being a good person. I'm guessing there's a lot of talk from Malone about being a man. He seems like one of those guys that's like, this is how you be a man, become a man, you know. Yeah. He just gives off that vibe. So I definitely
tranquil as a forest.
a lot of attitude goes into who they're going to draft because they don't want another Bones Highland situation, Will Barton situation, or young MPJ situation where these guys are like, I need the ball more.
Right.
I need it now.
So one last name that I want to bring up here. Drew Timmy.
Ooh.
Is projected to go late second round. He's more power forward and center built, but just his play style, you throw that into a three behind MPJ, I think he would actually fit in with the culture. Like you were saying, he's a little bit better on defense as well. Would you take a risk and maybe take him a little bit earlier?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an interesting factor because he has a Jokic-style game too. He passes the ball well. I think he plays a little bit better defense than Jokic would just because he moves a little bit better. But, yeah, I mean, that would totally be something I would be intrigued with.
We are definitely making great points here. We will get right back to it after this commercial break. All right, we are back on the best damn sports show, period. Before we left, we were talking about who the Nuggets will pick with the 40th pick, and Ian has some insight on who he thinks the Nuggets will draft.
Another boy out of Serbia.
Yeah, a 7-foot power forward out of Serbia, born in Italy but playing in Serbia right now. Currently projected to go 41st to Charlotte, so we have the pick ahead of them. But, I mean, you look at all of his big-time stats. He can shoot the threes. He's great with assists. His true shooting percentage is very similar to what Jokic's is currently. Mm-hmm. Again, this is all with a grain of salt because, again, the competition's Serbian, yeah. different. But I would not be surprised because, I mean, why not go for somebody similar to Jokic?
Imagine they got like, two Jokic's on their team. That would just be an elite combo.
I mean, we might as well start it. Why well, not?
Here's the thing about it, too, and we were kind of talking about this on the break. I feel like I have a crystal ball into the future, and I can see every NBA team trying to find the next best Nikola Jokic in their own way. I mean, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like every team's going to try to find that facilitating big man that can do it all, that can shoot in the paint, that can shoot the three, that can pass the ball, that can rebound the ball. Jokic has shown how dominant you can be from that position when you can utilize every part of your game. And I can imagine, that's kind of what I was trying to say in the last segment a little bit. You know, we're going to see a lot of random really tall guys drafted out of European countries, and I think it's because of the narrative of trying to find the next Nikola Jokic, the next best passing big man, because, you know, the NBA is a copycat league. We've seen it for so long. I mean, every team was trying to find the next, you know, Stephen Curry, and now I think the tides will change to the big man because we got Giannis, Embiid, and Jokic, and Jokic has shown that he might be the most dominant out of all of them, and it's because of his passing game.
But I like what you said there, too. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're totally fine.
There.
You're all right.
But that's a great observation that you made is there's so many teams that are going to be trying to copycat what the Nuggets have done, but another question that I want to add on to that, too, as well is, since that is starting to happen, do you think that centers will start getting paid more and more now because people want, or teams want players like Jokic on their team?
I think Jokic is such a unicorn in this situation because we've seen it with four different teams in the playoffs. Nobody can solve the Jokic problem. And that's not something that we've really been able to say about a player, especially at the center position, since maybe Shaq in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they can keep trying, but until they do find a stop, I still think he may just be a one-of-one prospect.
Well, I was going to say that, too. I think he's one-of-one.
Yeah, I think that asking teams to go out and look for a new Nikola Jokic is like asking to go and find a new Shohei Ohtani, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, they might be able to try to emulate that style of play and look for somebody, like you said, facilitates play in the same manner, but to find an exact carbon copy of Jokic is crazy.
And I think what they're going to end up digging up a lot of for the guys that are successful are a lot more Sabonises, where they're similar to Jokic, but they're still not on that same level where you can dish out 17 assists in a game. Sabonis will average his 6-7, and he'll have a couple games where he gets a triple-double, but I just don't think we're going to see a unicorn, God,
like Serbian overlord.
Well, like we see it in Sabonis. Sabonis is kind of the wannabe Jokic. He's a little bit skinnier, I think they're around the same height. Shoots the ball well, rebounds the ball well, passes the ball well. But Jokic is just like a little bit better at all of them. So I think we're going to see a lot of guys like Sabonis. And I think we see a team like the Kings following in the Nuggets' footsteps. They develop their entire team by themselves. They have a big man running the way with their number one point guard. And they're trying to create the same thing. We're seeing it already happen before our eyes. And I seriously just think that there's going to be a lot of random Jokic, Vucevic, you know, whatever itch in the draft this year that they're going to be chasing that Nikola Jokic that they're never going to find.
With that being said, too, do you see teams as a whole starting to move away from trying to build super teams and just develop their young players
Definitely.
Into getting into the finals instead of building super teams and being over the luxury tax and just being over the cap space?
Well, you've seen it. You know, we have the Nuggets this year, fully grown, built team. Mm-hmm. You can argue the Warriors last year as well were a pretty grown, built team after not having KD. Really, one of the main additions that helped them was Andrew Wiggins, but he wasn't the superstar that they went and picked up. He was kind of like the Aaron Gordon for the Nuggets. Mm-hmm. Great defensive presence that if he can get going offensively, you're going to win every game.
Yep.
The year before that, you see the Bucks. Bucks, fully homegrown team. Yep. You see the Raptors, fully homegrown team. I mean, the last time we saw a super team win a championship was when Kevin Durant was on the Warriors. So I totally think that guys are going to be looking to the draft because it's what's been successful in the past 4 or 5 seasons and all the championships. We're starting to spread the wealth a little bit to other teams. And, you know, it's like I said again, it's a copycat league. I think they'll do that.
Well, you said spread the wealth, and let us not forget that we could be looking at potentially much harsher penalties for going over the luxury tax. So that'll incentivize even further parity and trying to get teams to homegrow their stuff.
2 Supermax deals per team now? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, you're definitely going to see it naturally with that as well, more homegrown teams, because you're not going to be able to afford guys like having Steph, Clay, and KD at the same time.
Yep.
Right. And something else to think about here, and I think it's the reverse side of this coin. You look at Miami, they have one star and a bunch of undrafted
as
well. So I think it's really just going to be to depend on your team, your coach, and what fits that mold best. For us, with Michael Malone, even in his time in Sacramento, you know, he was very much a develop who we have and let's try to build it up. He got canned in Sacramento, but we see what we were able to build out of that.
Well, and you also see a team like the Celtics, same way, built their whole team. You see a team like the Lakers, who did not build their whole team, kind of had a super team, essentially, with quotations around it to start the year.
Yeah.
They had that big three super team. That did not work out for them at all.
No.
And they had to trade for depth because every amazing team right now has depth, homegrown depth, depth you pick up out of nowhere. Bruce Brown, you know, KCP. And you got the rookies like CB, you know, these other rookies in the league that are going to start coming through for their teams. So the league in the past couple years is taking a full shift, and I think it's taking a good shift. I think this is the best thing that could happen to basketball because I was getting sick and tired of the super team era where everybody's going somewhere to get talked about and to win a championship because we're too overpowered for you. Kevin Durant went to the Suns. Didn't work out for them this year. We'll see how it goes next year, but they need more depth.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think the right way to build it is have two stars and have bench depth.
Yep.
You have to find the happy balance between the two. Miami, they have the one and a little bit of depth, but it didn't put them over the edge. So that's the team I'm really looking at to be like, how do you really build a team? It feels like they're like the one star away. Where with Denver, we have our two main stars in Jokic and Murray, and we've built and we've got the depth.
I could truly agree with that, especially when talking about depth. Like, the super team era, I truly believe it's dead now. Like, you look at, like you were talking about, the Celtics. The Celtics had Kyrie Irving, and it's crazy to say they did way better without him.
They traded him away, and they're better now.
They're better. They got to Eastern Conference Finals without him while he was injured, too. So I think at this point, you don't need three guys that's going to take a lot of the money away from the other team, and you're just going to – you don't have any depth because look at the Suns now. Yes, that's where they're at now. They have no depth because you got KD. Aiden had a big contract. And then Devin Booker.
And they released Chris Paul and you ain't nothing for him.
Yeah, for him. So,
Well, not only that, just kind of going back to Kyrie, it also comes down to team chemistry as well because everywhere that Kyrie has gone and LeBron's not there, it has not ended well. We saw his Boston run just completely collapse. So he goes to Brooklyn, teams up with KD. Nothing happens. He gets traded to Dallas. People forget Dallas was the number 4 seed in the West. They didn't even make the playoffs, let alone the play-in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and you know what? So, going off of your point a little bit, Ian, something I found very interesting. A lot of good teams are firing their head coaches this year, and I actually think that is a humongous mistake after seeing what we've been seeing. We have two of the longest tenured coaches actively in the NBA right now that made it to the finals. 15 years for Spoelstra, 8 years for Malone. Have those all been pretty years for either of those guys? Absolutely not. Especially for the Nuggets. They went through some tough stuff before they made it here. But they kept the connection. They kept the loyalty. They kept that camaraderie, the chemistry between their whole team by not getting rid of their coach. And you see them. They're a family now. I'm worried about the Milwaukee Bucks. They had a family type of deal going, and now they have a whole new face leading the team, a new head coach. Maybe it's the change they need. I just don't think that like the Lakers situation after they won their chip. I think that was a good decision. But Nick Nurse and the Raptors, I don't. I think he's been carrying that team to the playoffs every year. I know they have Siakam, but I think his coaching has carried them there. So, and he's now on the Sixers. Doc Rivers, they didn't even give him a chance to get some chemistry with the team. So I think that coaching, keeping your coach also goes into that.
I'm not saying anyone in this room is a Fire Maloner, and specifically not you by any means, but just wanted to put out there in the universe, let us not forget how many Nuggets fans were willing to give Malone the axe if we didn't make it to where we did.
No, I was more of a trade MPJ guy. So.
All right, before we wrap it up, I want to go around quick and ask everyone, if you could meet any sports athlete, who would it be and why quickly? So
currently or all time?
All time.
John Elway in his prime.
Messi.
Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, that's tough. About I think I got to go with the sheriff. Old Pepe.
Peyton Manning. I will definitely go with someone that, I don't know, just stuck with me so close. Even though he's not a Bronco no more, I'm going to go with Von Miller.
Hey, that's a good choice, though. That's a good choice.
Hang out on a chicken farm.
Yes, I'm going to go with Von. But I want to appreciate everyone for listening today. And, you know, the guys coming on talking sports with me. You know, you're listening to the best damn sports show, period. And we're signing off. Thank you.